Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, we open our show with some top national and statewide news stories. President Joe Biden has signed a stopgap funding bill to prevent a government shutdown, but only for a few weeks. Find out what it includes and what was left out on our show today. Governor Gavin Newsom has announced who he is appointing to replace the vacancy left by the death of Senator Dianne Feinstein. We'll have details on our new senator for you today, and we'll also have a look back at the life and legacy of Senator Feinstein, California's longest-serving senator, who broke many glass ceilings for women in politics, as well as being an advocate for women's rights, LGBTQ rights, preventing gun violence, and more. In local news, hear why some parents and educators are criticizing the Grossmont Union High School District's decision to replace its longtime mental health care provider after a complaint by a conservative over care of LGBTQ plus students. On Jobs Talk, La Mesa's City Council has voted unanimously to become the first city in San Diego County to adopt the Project Labor Agreement for major public works projects. Hear what that means for workers and for the city on our show today. La Mesa's council majority also reversed its earlier opposition to digital billboards, moving forward on a plan, but critics say the city may be putting profits over public safety. A new COVID-19 vaccine is now available in our region, plus the federal government is once again providing free COVID tests, and we'll have details. On our arts and music segment today, we'll be airing our interview with Robert Neal, the star of So Good, the Neal Diamond Experience, coming to the Magnolia Theater in El Cajon on October 21st. And then on Destination East County, hear about all the most fun festivals and events coming up across our inland region, including an Apple Festival, Oktoberfest, Halloween Haunts, a comedy show, a rock star in concert, and more. From Public News Service, learn why some experts are warning that proposals for a constitutional convention could backfire on progressives. And finally, we'll have a warning from CAL FIRE about drones that are impeding firefighting efforts here in California and the penalties drone operators could face. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is John Tidwell with a Capitol Report. President Joe Biden has signed a stopgap spending bill to prevent a government shutdown threatened by right-wing Republicans. The measure funds the government for 45 days. All five members of San Diego County's congressional delegation voted Saturday to keep the federal government open. The Spending Reduction and Border Security Act, as the stopgap bill was called, passed with House Democrats joining some Republicans to pass the measure, though 91 Republicans voted against it. The Senate later passed the stopgap measure, which President Joe Biden signed over the weekend. The stopgap bill will provide short-term funding for federal employees, from military members and Border Patrol agents to air traffic controllers and National Park Rangers. But it does not include aid to Ukraine, which many Republicans have refused to support. While right-wing Republicans rejected the stopgap measure, House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy dismissed the concerns that hardline Republicans in the Freedom Caucus could try to oust him as leader. The Republican House leader joined with Democrats to get the measure passed. He told reporters, "I want to be the adult in the room. Go ahead and try. If I have to risk my job for standing up for the American public, I will do that." Democrats positioned the vote as a victory and a responsibility because active duty Navy, Marine Corps, Border Patrol, and Coast Guard would have to serve without pay. Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs, who represents Central San Diego County, said, "I'm so proud that House Democrats outnumbered and outwitted far-right Republicans, held the line against their extreme agenda, and watched them fold. Jacobs added, "Today, we extended our current budget and prevented a government shutdown, providing relief and continued paychecks for so many people across the country." Congressman Mike Levin said, "I voted to pass this short-term funding extension because it was the right thing to do for my district, my country, our troops, and millions of hardworking families who need access to government services and benefits." The battle will be waged again, however, as efforts to ramp up to prevent a shutdown before a stopgap measure expires in mid-November. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin urged Congress to live up to America's commitment to provide urgently needed assistance to the people of Ukraine as they fight to defend their own country against the forces of tyranny. "America must live up to its word and continue to lead," Austin said. CNN reports. House Democratic leadership said in a statement Saturday that they expect House Speaker Kevin McCarthy to bring a separate Ukraine aid bill to vote when the House returns. Bipartisan Senate leaders have also pledged to hold a vote in the coming weeks on funding to help Ukraine defend against Russia's brutal invasion. President Joe Biden issued this statement, "We cannot under any circumstances allow American support for Ukraine to be interrupted."
On Sunday night, Governor Gavin Newsom appointed LaFonza Butler, president of Emily's List, to replace the late U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein and finish out her term through 2024. Emily's List is a political action committee focused on electing pro-choice Democratic legislators. Governor Newsom said, as an advocate for women and girls, a second-generation fighter for working people, and a trusted advisor to Vice President Harris, LaFonza Butler represents the best of California. And he added, LaFonza will carry the baton left by Senator Feinstein, continue to break glass ceilings, and fight for all Californians in Washington, D.C. Butler for many years was the president of SEIU Local 2015, a labor union representing long-term caregivers, before becoming a partner in a political consulting firm that counts Newsom among its clients. She later worked in public policy for Airbnb and was a University of California regent, CalMatters reports. She will be the first LGBTQ+ person to represent California in the U.S. Senate, giving Newsom, who was appointed the state's first Latino senator and the first openly gay justice to the California Supreme Court, the opportunity to rack up another first. Jody Hicks, president and CEO of Planned Parenthood Affiliates of California, says LaFonza has been an inspiration to many and predicts she will be an amazing advocate for Californians in the Senate. The news that Butler, who is black, would succeed Feinstein came as Newsom faced intense public pressure to appoint a black woman to the job. This was in part due to his comments after his 2020 appointment of Alex Padilla to the U.S. Senate, after then-Senator Kamala Harris was elected vice president, leaving no black women in the Senate. Newsom said if he got a chance to name a successor to Feinstein, he would want a black woman. But 6 months later on NBC's Meet the Press, amid Feinstein's declining health and decision not to seek re-election, Newsom said if given the opportunity, he would make an interim appointment to avoid tipping the balance in a crowded March primary race for the seat. The lineup already includes three high-profile Democratic candidates, congressional members Adam Schiff of Burbank, Katie Porter of Irvine, and Barbara Lee of Oakland. The implication that a black woman should only serve in the Senate in a caretaker capacity led to public outcry from Lee, who was black, and her supporters. So by late Sunday, the governor's office confirmed to CalMatters that his appointee would, in fact, be free to run for a full term, though there's no word yet on if she plans to do so. Senator Feinstein, who represented California for over three decades, served as a trailblazer for women in politics. She died at her home in Washington, D.C., the evening of September 28th. Vaulted into the spotlight when dual assassinations elevated her to mayor of San Francisco, she later became one of the most powerful women in America, chairing the Senate Intelligence Committee and serving as the ranking Democrat on the Senate Judiciary Committee. She fought for women's rights, gun control, and LGBTQ rights, from AIDS funding to gay marriage. She led an investigation into CIA torture and demanded reforms, and once said the vote she most regretted was supporting the Iraq War initiated by President George W. Bush. She was, however, viewed as a political moderate, also supporting law and order measures, the death penalty, and a strong national defense. Her staff issued a statement calling the senior Democrat's passing a great loss for so many, adding, Senator Feinstein never backed away from a fight for what was just and right. At the same time, she was always willing to work with anyone, even those she disagreed with, if it meant bettering the lives of Californians or the betterment of our nation. There are few women who can be called senator, chairman, mayor, wife, mom, and grandmother. She left a legacy that is undeniable and extraordinary. Feinstein cast her last vote, an effort to stop government shutdown, the morning of September 28th, and died that evening. Despite failing health, she had pledged to complete her term of office, but had announced she would not seek re-election next year, opening the door for a new generation of leadership for California on Capitol Hill. President Joe Biden ordered flags flown at half-mast to honor Feinstein's memory, calling her a pioneering American and true trailblazer. Former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said Dianne Feinstein, right from the start, was an icon for women in politics. Born in San Francisco in 1933, Feinstein's father was a Jewish refugee from Poland who became a surgeon and a professor at the UC San Francisco Medical School. Her mother, born in Russia, was a Russian Orthodox Catholic. Her parents were not only different religions, but also members of opposite political parties, her mother a Democrat, her father a Republican. Feinstein has attributed her reputation as a political moderate to her upbringing. After graduating from a Catholic high school where she was the only Jewish student, she obtained a bachelor's degree in history at Stanford University, where she served as student body president. In 1955, she eloped with prosecutor Jack Berman. They had a daughter, Catherine, but divorced in 1959, so Feinstein became a single mother. The next year, Governor Pat Brown appointed her to serve on the California Women's Board of Terms and Parole, which began her lifelong public service career. In 1962, she married Bertram Feinstein, a neurosurgeon, and later she was elected to the San Francisco Board of Supervisors and became the board's chair. Her second husband died in 1978, and just 2 months later, San Francisco Mayor George Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk, a prominent gay rights advocate, were assassinated. A shocked Feinstein found their bodies and announced the brutal murders to the world. That tragedy cemented her lifelong commitment to fight against gun violence. Under San Francisco's laws of succession, Feinstein became the first woman mayor and later won election in her own right. As mayor, she led renovation of the city's cable cars, famously photographed riding the city's iconic transit. She also oversaw the 1984 Democratic presidential election. In 1980, she married Richard Bloom, the founder of Bloom Capital. She ran for governor in 1990, but lost. Watching all-male senators grilling Anita Hill, a woman who accused Clarence Thomas of sexual harassment during his Supreme Court confirmation hearing, fired up Feinstein to run for the Senate. She won a special election in 1992, the first woman to represent California in the Senate, and was reelected 5 times. In 2012, she received 7.8 million votes, the most by any Senate candidate in history. Continuing to break glass ceilings, she became the first woman to chair the Senate Rules Committee and the Senate Intelligence Committee. She told the Associated Press in 2005, I recognize that women have had to fight for everything they have gotten, every right. As the top Democrat on the Judiciary Committee, she grilled nominees for court, including Supreme Court nominees, famously opposing the nomination of Justice Brett Kavanaugh after a woman accused him of raping her when he was in a college fraternity. She authored the assault weapons ban signed into law by President Bill Clinton in 1994, an act credited with dramatically reducing mass shootings and saving lives until Republicans blocked renewal of the act in 2004, a decade later. Long a champion of women's reproductive freedoms, Feinstein co-authored the Women's Health Protection Act of 2023, an effort to guarantee access to abortion and reproductive health care for women nationwide after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Ironically, however, Feinstein voted for the Supreme Court nomination of Amy Coney Barrett, a conservative woman appointed by Donald Trump, who later voted to overturn Roe v. Wade and allow states to ban or restrict abortion. The National Organization for Women, or NOW, issued this statement on Feinstein's passing. Senator Dianne Feinstein was the longest-serving woman in the U.S. Senate. While her 30-year career was not without controversy or criticism, Her work on the Violence Against Women Act, gay marriage, gun control, and a long list of legislation illustrates what can happen when women get elected to office. We hope her legacy inspires others to check women's names on a ballot or envision their own on one. Senator Feinstein also fought battles for Californians, including San Diego County residents. After the deadly and devastating 2007 San Diego firestorms, including the Witch, Paradise, and Harris wildfires, Senator Feinstein came to San Diego, where she chaired a congressional hearing here to investigate wildfire prevention efforts, including local officials' actions, a hearing covered by this journalist. There, the senator grilled San Diego officials and sharply criticized them for failing to provide adequate fire resources for our region. "People have to understand there will eventually be loss of life on a massive scale if nothing happens," she warned, after learning that the city did not have nearly the number of fire stations required to meet federal standards in Rancho Bernardo, where many homes were destroyed by the wildfire, and hearing San Diego's fire chief testify that he lacked the resources needed for an appropriate response. In February 2022, Feinstein's longtime husband, Bloom, died. Feinstein suffered her own physical decline, taking a 3-month leave of absence earlier this year due to a severe case of shingles complicated by encephalitis. She showed signs of cognitive impairment, at times forgetting names, and appearing to be prompted by aides as she cast her votes in the Judiciary Committee. Even some Democratic colleagues called on her to resign. But the 90-year-old resolved to complete her term, in part because of fears that Republicans would refuse to seat anyone appointed to replace her on the Judiciary Committee, an action that could leave important judge seats unfilled until the next election. Her strong sense of ethics pervaded her long tenure in office, exemplified when she led an investigation in 2014 into abuses by the Central Intelligence Committee, or CIA, of prisoners during the Iraq War, a war she voted for but later came to regret supporting. Her investigation led to a voluminous report and reforms. At that time, she stated, "History will judge us by our commitment to a just society governed by law, and the willingness to face an ugly truth and say, never again." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This is Cecily Shamino with an education report. Grossmont Union High School District's board majority is drawing sharp criticism for voting to drop its contract with San Diego Youth Services, the district's longtime mental health services provider. The company provided two programs for the district: on-site clinicians who counseled students referred by teachers over mental health concerns, and a suicide prevention program. The action came after a July 20th board meeting at which Cajon Valley School Board member Anthony Carnival told Grossmont trustees that he had asked the chief executive director of San Diego Youth Services whether students could receive talks or referrals on gender change surgery from counselors. Carnival told trustees he did not answer my question and asked if I did not want LGBTQ+ students receiving care. Carnival said his district ended its contract due to those concerns. The motion to drop San Diego Youth Services was made by Grossmont trustee Gary Woods. Trustees Jim Kelly and Rob Shield voted in favor, while trustees Chris Feit and Elvis Salinas voted against ending the services. Woods said, "We need to look for alternatives that best reflect East County values." Woods is a religious conservative who has taught seminary at Shadow Mountain Church and is director of Equip Biblical Institute, EBI, Leadership Development, which includes instruction in intelligent design, or creationism. Wellness Together will be the new mental health services provided for the Grossmont District. However, KPBS reports that this company must also follow state law requiring inclusive treatment of LGBTQ students. Many parents and students packed the boardroom in late August to speak out against the board's decision and ask for reconsideration, which the board majority refused to grant. Zoe Miller, a student, told the board that a San Diego Youth Services therapist saved my life, adding, "I wouldn't be here without her help." Math teacher Kristen Laprelle urged the board to keep its longtime mental health provider, quote, "so our kids don't commit suicide," noting that LGBTQ+ youths contemplate suicide at a rate 4 times higher than straight kids. Trustees Feit and Salinas blasted the board majority's decision in separate editorials published by the San Diego Union-Tribune. The three majority members have refused media requests to explain their decision. Salinas said the decision was made without any research, adding, "students were both disregarded and silenced." Salinas noticed that teen suicide is at the highest level ever recorded, with 1 in 3 teen girls seriously considering suicide, according to a February 2023 press release from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control. At an August 30th emergency board meeting calling to seek a solution, parents and teachers pleaded with the board to reconsider. Salinas says, when asked if they had found any evidence that the claims against San Diego Youth Services were valid, they said no. Despite this, the board stood by its decision. Fight voiced concerns over the well-being of LGBTQ students to not be shunned or discriminated against. He asked, don't they need mental health care like anybody else? Are they not people too? Trustees represent all of these students and parents. Jay Steiger, a teacher and parent of students in the district, has announced he is running for the Grossmont board over concerns about extremism. If elected, he would replace Salinas, who is not seeking re-election. He calls the board majority's decision deeply unsettling and perplexing. He notes that San Diego Youth Services has worked with the Grossmont Union High School District for decades. He says this action reflects extremist behaviors seen at school boards across the state. He differs sharply with Trustee Woods on the definition of East County values. Steiger concludes, the East County community that I cherish values the lives and welfare of all our young people. I stand with the community in urging the board to reconsider this decision. The lives of our children may well depend on it.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Welcome to East County Magazine Show's Jobs Talk, bringing you news about great jobs, job training opportunities, and growing our regional economy.
By a unanimous, bipartisan 5-0 vote, the La Mesa City Council has voted to become the first city in San Diego County to adopt a Project Labor Agreement, or PLA, with the San Diego Building and Construction Trades Council and associated craft unions. The PLA will apply to public construction projects in La Mesa with a construction value of at least $1 million, requiring that contractors hire local workers and provide union-scale pay and benefits. Councilmember Colin Parent proposed approval of the PLA agreement drafted by staff after negotiations with the unions. He said, we're making sure we'll be delivering projects on time and on budget, so taxpayers get the kind of infrastructure they deserve. Parent thanked workers who showed up to testify for standing up for your families, for each other, and for working people. Councilmember Patricia Dillard said, I think it's a win-win for the workers, the unions, our businesses, and our city. Councilmember Jack Hsu said he'd heard terrible stories years ago of workers being cheated by contractors who brought in workers from out of state. When those workers went home, the wealth they had earned was spent elsewhere. By contrast, under a PLA, local workers hired by contractors are more likely to spend money in La Mesa and be trained under state-approved apprenticeship programs. City Treasurer Matt Strabone noted that the PLA includes a clause that requires if any city in the region negotiates more favorable terms in a PLA, then La Mesa will automatically get those same terms. 13 speakers spoke during public comments, all but one of them in favor of the PLA. Many speakers represented labor unions, and several were La Mesa residents. Matthew Gonzalez, general manager of the San Diego Building and Construction Trades, said by hiring workers who live in or near La Mesa, workers can spend more time with their families and volunteer at their kids' Little League games while helping to change their own neighborhoods and contribute to the local economy. He said PLA projects get completed on schedule and ahead of budget, in part since the PLA prevents strikes by workers and provides phenomenal income and support for their families. Victor Diaz, a union carpenter and La Mesa resident, recalled having a long commute in the past that prevented him from spending enough time with his young children. He said his neighbors, who were not union members, got cheated on their pay because of contractors bringing in people from out of state and paying cash under the table. This PLA will assure that cheating contractors like those will stay away from La Mesa, he said. The only opponent, Mike McManus, with Associated General Contractors, told the council, PLAs are discriminatory against over 90% of local contractors who have decided to be non-union. He said PLAs also lock out non-union Latinos and prevent participation in non-union apprenticeship programs, adding, 80% of our apprentices are Latinos. But Gretchen Newsom, with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 569, said that projects under a PLA are awarded through a fair, open, and competitive process for union and non-union businesses alike. She added that 92% of all construction apprentices are enrolled in union apprenticeship programs, of whom 62% are Latinos and over 90% are women. The apprentices include people with barriers to entry into the workplace, such as foster youths. Carol Kim, business manager for the San Diego Building and Construction Trades Council, countered claims made by the Associated General Contractors representative. She said discrimination isn't something that's taking place. She noted that San Diego Unified School District has had a PLA for 10 years, with many projects built. 80% of those construction contracts go to non-union contractors, she told the council. PLAs in place with local agencies don't require that workers belong to unions, only that contractors on public projects pay union wages and benefits. Kim clarified, in many of our trades, we have dozens and dozens of non-union workers who have been fully vested in unions because of PLAs. They have never paid union dues or joined a union, but they have benefited. She added, this is actually collective work where we decide public tax dollars should do more than build buildings. We should invest in people's lives. Kim concluded her remarks to the city council stating, thank you for being brave enough to be the first city in the region to bring this forward. This is John Tidwell with East County Magazine on KNSJ, the network for social justice.
The La Mesa City Council voted 4-1 at its September 27th meeting to ask staff to prepare a revised request for proposals for digital billboards, with Councilman Jack Hsu opposed. The action reversed a July 25th vote when council rejected a similar proposal by a 3-2 vote. The major difference? The new plan would provide that any revenues the city receives off digital billboards for the first 5 years would be spent equally on police, fire protection, and the arts, said Councilman Colin Parent, who introduced the revised measure. Several people showed up before the meeting with protest signs such as "Keep digital billboards out of La Mesa," though some others spoke in support. The current municipal code prohibits electronic billboards, so before council could approve any actual billboard, council would have to amend the municipal code. State law prohibits new billboards, so only replacement of existing billboards could occur. The Federal Highway Beautification Act would also apply. Councilmember Patricia Dillard asked for safety data, but the city attorney said that would be requested as part of the Request for Proposal, or RFP, process, then come back to the council for public vetting. During public comments, speakers were sharply divided on the issue. Opponents cited concerns ranging from safety to aesthetics. Paul Kruger urged council to reject any efforts to move forward on digital billboards. He lives in San Diego near SDSU. He objects to electronic billboards and kiosks as garish and unsafe. He called on the council to find other sources of funding for public safety and the arts. Former council member Christine Alessio asked, do you want to devalue our quality of life? Do you really want to have giant flashing billboards? She added, are we for sale to the highest bidders for billboards and development proposals? That's not the way La Mesa should be. Ron Askeland with the San Diego Sierra Club said electronic billboards could increase traffic accidents and that revenues were not worth the aesthetic harm. Don Wood asked whether staff would be relying on information provided by billboard companies and asked if the public would have a chance to comment on a proposed RFP before it would be issued. Bill Wilson, president of the La Mesa Police Officers Association, applauded council for having the courage to explore different options for non-tax-based revenues, adding, it is very important that we keep the city safe. Melissa Walter, a commissioner for the city's Arts and Culture Commission, said they are working on a new walkway to the Stars mural and other public art projects and want to pay fair wages to artists, but they need financial support. She asked the council to find a way to fund a sustainable arts and culture program for La Mesa. Lane Lawson, Clear Channel Outdoors Vice President and Public Affairs for California, said the company has worked with the Cushman family, longtime owners of Grossmont Center, for years to bring the city proposed outdoor signs. He said Clear Channel had obtained a preliminary approval for a digital billboard on Interstate 8 near the shopping mall. He said revenue to the city could exceed $3 million for each digital billboard approved. Vice Mayor Laura Lothian called this a tough decision, since she wants to preserve the community's charm, but also wants to support the arts and police. She wound up reversing her earlier opposition after learning that 248 of 250 letters in opposition came from outside La Mesa. Councilman Hsu called the plan flawed. His main reasons for opposing the proposal centered around aesthetics and safety, noting that 15 studies raised serious concerns about potential driver distractions. Hsu said, I don't believe the city's budget is in dire straits, adding that he believes there is enough money already to fund the arts. Parent proposed adding criteria to any RFP, including being compliant with all laws, guaranteeing that La Mesa could have its own public service messaging, limiting digital billboards only to commercial areas, excluding the village, with none in residential areas, requiring the RFP to be made public and any proposal be calendared for a public meeting before council votes on it. Mayor Rapostathis made a motion to approve staff preparing for a request for a proposal for electronic billboards. The proposal passed 4-1, with Hsu opposed. In a call to East County Magazine, former Mayor Art Madrid blasted the action. Madrid, who spent 45 years serving the city as mayor, councilman, and on commission, said, that issue has been before prior councils many times. He said council also rejected such proposals unanimously. He likened the issue to cell phone companies offering money to position unsightly towers, which were also rejected. It was all about money then, and it's all about money now, he said. Besides visual blight, Madrid is concerned about safety and the financial well-being of the city. He called the council negligent for not taking steps to prevent a protest from dissolving into a riot that resulted in the city paying out $10 million to a protester who lost an eye from a police-fired projectile. Madrid concluded, I can predict to you that this will again encumber the city with lawsuits. People will be distracted by the sign. They will have accidents, and they will sue the city. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Cecily Chaminot.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is Cecily Chaminot with a health report. A new COVID-19 vaccine designed to target the latest variants is now available. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control recommends it for everyone 6 months and older, as long as it's been at least 2 months since your last vaccine. The new vaccine is offered at no cost for adults, according to the CDC. This is the first fall and winter virus season where vaccines are available for all three viruses responsible for most hospitalizations, COVID-19, RSV, and flu. With COVID surging, the federal government is once again offering free at-home COVID-19 tests. Each U.S. household can order 4 free rapid tests delivered to your residence. The tests can be ordered through the U.S. Postal Service at usps.com/testkits or by calling 1-800-232-0233.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Arts and Music Spotlight.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, my very special guest is Robert Neary, a star of Broadway, TV, and movies. He's also a talented musician and the star of So Good, The Neil Diamond Experience, a live show coming to the Magnolia Theater in El Cajon on Saturday, October 21st. His uncanny tribute performance will include 22 of Neil Diamond's greatest hits, such as Cherry Cherry, Sweet Caroline, Solitary Man, and others, backed by the Mystic Band. And he's also going to be telling some stories, I understand, behind some of those classic songs. He grew up on Long Island, listening to and mimicking his two favorite artists, Elvis Presley and Neil Diamond. His acting career started with a guest star role on the TV series Fame. Later, he co-starred in the movie Teen Wolf 2 and played Officer Frank Marino, for those of you who are soap opera fans, on General Hospital. He moved to Nashville and recorded two solo contemporary gospel projects before moving to L.A., where he went on to guest star in over 50 TV shows, such as Criminal Minds, Grey's Anatomy, FBI's Most Wanted, and many more. He also played the lead role of Sonny in the Broadway hit A Bronx Tale, the musical. The real Neil Diamond has retired from performing recently, but it's long been a passion of Robert's to someday put together a tribute show to Neil Diamond, which you can see on October 21st at the Magnolia. So, Robert, welcome. It is a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, as a kid growing up in New York, what first attracted you to Neil Diamond's music? What makes it so special?
I like I had said, you know, I used to listen to Elvis Presley, and I was attracted to Elvis Presley, of course, because of the movies back then in the 60s. And then I would listen to it. And then one day I remember my older brother had a really big record collection, and he was playing a Neil Diamond album. And I said, wow, this guy's got like a baritone voice, you know, that really rich baritone voice like Elvis Presley. So I just started listening to him. And, you know, and I just really, really took into, you know, to liking his music so much and his voice. Yeah.
You picked two of my favorites growing up, too. I got to see Elvis Presley in person, never got to see Neil Diamond, was planning to. And then he announced his retirement.
Yeah.
So what musical training did you receive, Robert, and how did your career in acting prepare you for becoming a musical performer?
I actually had no musical training. I taught myself how to play guitar. I taught myself how to play piano. Never took any voice lessons. I just started singing when I was like 5-6 years old.
Amazing.
When company would come over, aunts and uncles and everybody, I would just, you know, do my little shows in the living room. I knew exactly what I wanted to do, what I wanted to be ever since I was a little kid. So I went through high school just, you know, knowing that when I got the chance, I'd move to California and become an actor. And the singing was always there. I did high school musicals, and I did, you know, some musicals outside of high school. But once I got into acting, once I got to LA, the acting was forefront.
Yeah. You know, so you got a lot of natural talent.
Yes.
What is, I know it's hard to choose, but do you have a favorite Neil Diamond song? And can you maybe share one of your favorite Neil Diamond stories that people might hear at the Magnolia?
Yeah, I do. As a matter of fact, I Am I Said is one of my favorites. Holly Holy and I Am I Said and Shiloh are my three favorites. Yeah. I Am I Said mostly because it's a very personal song, and I actually talk about how it became his most personal song and how he wrote it. And I don't want to divulge any secret right now, but
it's under the show, folks.
Yeah, it's a fantastic song. It took him 4 months to write it. He was going through a very, very dark time in his life. And that's all I'm going to say. And just once I always loved that song, but once I found out that story and I incorporated it into my show, I really feel for it because he moved from New York to California and, you know, had a big change of life, much like I did when I was younger. And and a lot of people, as far as a story about Neil Diamond, a lot of people ask me if I've ever met him.
Mm-hmm.
And I jokingly say, but it's true. I say, well, I parked his car in Nashville in 1995.
That was on my list. I was going to ask what he was like, if you've ever heard from him since you started this tribute.
Well, the truth is I was recording a couple of gospel albums of my own in Nashville. And I had worked at a valet restaurant, at a very popular restaurant in Nashville. And it was late at night, and the car pulled up, and I opened up the passenger side, and he stepped out, and he was with his manager. And I said, oh my God, you're Neil Diamond. And I shook his hand and we chatted. And then he was in there. They were in there for quite a while. So I told everybody else they can leave. And it was just me at the end. And I gave him the keys and we were able to chat, you know, and just talk. And I think I have his autograph. But back then, of course, there were no phones with cameras, which would have been great. But yeah, that's the only time I did get to meet him. However, I was in touch with his wife, Katie, via a third person, a mutual friend, mm-hmm. when I put this show together. I wanted to make sure I was doing everything legitimate. You know, I wasn't stepping on any copyrights or anything.
Yeah, I wonder, and what did he think about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she gave me great response. His wife, Katie, gave great response through my friend and said they love the tribute shows. And she wishes us the best. And she gave me advice and everything. And I hope really someday that he does get to come and see this. If not this time around LA, maybe next time.
That would be awesome. A couple more quick questions. Let's talk about your acting for a second. You've had starring roles on Broadway, on TV, in movies, as well as a musician. I wonder if you have a couple of memorable moments from that illustrious career that you could share.
Oh gosh, there's so many. Yeah, my favorite, the first time this happened as an actor, as a matter of fact, you know, auditioning and getting roles and auditioning and not getting roles. And then a lot of times going in for certain television shows, especially through the 2000s. I kept going in for Criminal Minds. And one day I was driving in the car, my agent calls and she told me about this role on Criminal Minds. And I said, well, what time is the, you know, when's the audition? Can you email me the audition material? And she says, no. They're going to hire you. They know you very well. They're just going to, it's straight to offer. And it turned into two episodes. It was supposed to be, they told me it's supposed to be about six or seven episodes, but it turned into two episodes. I was Giuseppe Mantolo. I was a major unsub in season 11.
So you get to work with all the big stars.
Yeah, they were great. So that, you know, that being able to just, you know, as an actor, just say, hey, no, it went straight to offer. And most recently, that just happened last year as well. I'm so popular now with my show and touring with the Neil Diamond Show. I told my managers, my acting agents, you know, that, you know, I'm getting away from this because the business has shifted and I don't do a lot of auditions. So mm-hmm. I'm not auditioning anymore. And if anybody wants, they know where I am. And she called me one day and she said, hey, the Blacklist wants you. And I said, I'm not auditioning. And she said, no, they're offering you the lead role. They want you to come in.
Every actor's dream, huh?
Yeah, exactly. You have to show up. I'm at a good place where I can at least say that, you know.
Very cool. I want to ask you, what advice you might give to up-and-coming performers? You know, all those young kids like you that are out there listening to this maybe and, you know, wanting to make it someday. What advice would you offer to them?
You know, and I say this because my son, actually, I'm taking them to a college meeting today. I'd say to my son and my daughter, you know, you've got something. You can never say I can't. You can never say I can't. You've got to just keep going. You've just got to keep going. What will happen is if you don't have it, it will be shown. You know, you'll get people who you get close to and say, you know what, maybe something else, you know, like people who want to be a singer, you know, and they just can't sing. A talented singer or musician that can be brought out. You know, you can take training and that can all be brought out if it's not God given. And you'll know once you know that it's there and everybody agrees with you, you just can't say no. You can't say I can't do it. Yeah. I can't do it. You just have to keep going. And if you have, and if you have the tenacity and the support of family and friends and loved ones, then you can do it. And again, the only downside is if you don't have it, but you think you have it, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough, you know? So.
Yeah. I want to play just a little snippet so people can kind of hear what you sound like here.
Oh, if you got something, sure.
There you go, folks. If you didn't know better, you'd think you were listening to Neil Diamond himself. We are just about out of time. Yeah. Is there anything else that, Robert, that you would like our listeners and viewers, I should say, because we're also going to run the video of the interview on our website at eastcountymagazine.org.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So we've got double coverage. What else would you like folks to know?
You know, well, this is down in San Diego, right? Around down there. I was in the lead in the Moonlight Amphitheater, Catch Me If You Can, some 9 years ago.
Oh, good for you.
I played Frank Abagnale Sr. In the Moonlight Catch Me If You Can. So a lot of people might know me already from down there.
There you go.
And this is a tremendous show. It's a tremendous show. And I hope a lot of people...
Yeah, I've watched the highlights. It looks fantastic.
Thank you.
So, listeners, for those of you who've just tuned in, we've been speaking with Robert Neary, who will be performing live in the tribute concert So Good, The Neil Diamond Experience, coming up at the Magnolia Theater in downtown El Cajon on Saturday, October 21st. You can get tickets at magnoliasandiego.com, and you can view highlights, hear a little of the music, and learn more at SoGoodTheNeilDiamondExperience.com. Robert, thanks so much once again for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Thank you.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery.
And this is Cecily Shamino with this week's Destination East County.
As autumn arrives and Halloween draws near, East County has a wealth of festivals and events coming up. These include Julian's Autumn Jubilee and an Heirloom Apple Festival, Oktoberfests in El Cajon, the Borrego Days Desert Festival, Haunt Fest on Main in downtown El Cajon, a pumpkin bash and spooky camp over at Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine, and a Pumpkin Express train ride in Campo, the comic Randy Rainbow at the Magnolia, the rock artist Sting at San Diego State University, and El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells with his band and a benefit concert to help the homeless in El Cajon.
The Julian Autumn Jubilee takes place each weekend from September 23rd through October 29th. Enjoy Julian's famous apple season with activities including a hayride, cider pressing demonstration, hoedown and jug band show, petting zoo, pumpkin patch, reptile interactions, candle dipping, and painting craft. There's also an adventure package option if you want to try your hand at archery and tomahawk throwing. Other options include You Pick Veggies, Herbs and Berries, Fairy and Dinosaur Garden Crafts, and more. For tickets and details, visit fortcross.com.
El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells and his all-star band will revisit pop and soul classics in a concert to benefit the East County Transitional Living Center, a facility which helps homeless individuals and families transition off the streets and transform their lives. This year's concert will be held on Saturday, September 30th, from 5 to 9 p.m. at the Magnolia Theater in downtown El Cajon, and you can get tickets at magnoliasandiego.com.
The German-American Societies of San Diego will host 2 weekends of Oktoberfest at their El Cajon headquarters on September 29th through October 1st and October 6th through the 8th. An opening day parade and keg tap kicks off the festivities Friday evening, September 29th, when the Oktoberfest Queen will be crowned. A band direct from Germany will perform traditional German music, just as you'd hear in the beer gardens of Bavaria. You can also watch folk dancing, compete in games and contests, visit craft vendors, and take children to a kids zone. Plus, savor authentic German food such as bratwurst, ox on the spit potato salad, potato pancakes, sauerkraut, red cabbage, and German pastries, as well as German beers. A raffle will also be held, and the grand prize is a trip for two to Germany. Tickets are available online at events.germanclubsandiego.org.
Ranchita del Rayo in Julian invites you to a late-season apple festival, October 1st through 30th, from 9:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. The rancho is located at 1711 Highway 78 in Julian. Visitors can savor several varieties of heirloom apples grown in Julian and available just once a year. You can also taste apple cider made from the Ranchita's heirloom apples, pick apples yourself, and stroll through the vintage orchard. Homemade jams and preserves will be available as local foodies and apple enthusiasts share their specialties. For more information, visit Ranchita del Rayo on Facebook, and that's Rayo spelled R-E-O.
Famed rock artist Sting, otherwise known as Gordon Sumner, will perform live on October 4th at the Cal Coast Amphitheater at San Diego State University. The English musician was frontman for The Police before going solo. He has received 17 Grammy Awards and won Song of the Year for Every Breath You Take. He also received a Golden Globe, an Emmy, and 4 Academy Award nominations for Best Original Song. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2003, has performed at Buckingham Palace, Kennedy Center, and the White House, among other prominent venues. Tickets are available at SDSU Cal Coast Amphitheater's website.
The Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo invites you to take a ride aboard the Pumpkin Express. You can celebrate Halloween on the decorated vintage rail cars, along an excursion through San Diego's backcountry each Saturday and Sunday from October 7th through October 28th. After the train returns to the museum grounds, passengers will head to the display building, where children and their parents can decorate pumpkins from the museum's pumpkin patch. Guests can also view Halloween scenes and haunted train rides. Pumpkins are included in the purchase of every toddler and child ticket on the Pumpkin Express, and additional pumpkins are available for purchase. Passengers of all ages are encouraged to arrive in costume. For tickets, visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum website at psrm.org.
The Randy Rainbow for President Comedy Show is coming to the Magnolia Theater in El Cajon on October 4th. Randy Rainbow is a 3-time Emmy-nominated American comedian, producer, actor, singer, writer, and satirist, best known for his popular YouTube series, The Randy Rainbow Show. His musical parodies and political spoofs have garnered him worldwide acclaim and 2 Emmy nominations. In 2019, he landed a spot on the New York Times Best Performances list, and in 2020, The Washington Post proclaimed Rainbow as Best Parody. For tickets, visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com.
The City of El Cajon presents HauntFest on Main, a family-friendly Halloween season festival on Friday, October 20th from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. The 10th annual HauntFest on Main features live music on 2 stages, plus other performances, costume contests, expanded carnival rides and games, a car show, candy challenge, kids' zone, face painting, pumpkin patch, craft and game booths, LED rock wall, inflatables for kids, plus a surprise feature of movies in the park. Find more information at hauntfest.org.
The 57th annual Borrego Days Desert Festival, produced by the Borrego Chamber of Commerce, will be held October 21st and 22nd at Christmas Circle Community Park in Borrego Springs. The festival includes live musical entertainment, art exhibits, a kids' zone, food vendors, artisans, a beer garden, a car show, and more. For details, visit borregodays.com.
Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine invites you to 2 wildly eerie events: a family-friendly pumpkin bash on October 29th and a spooky campover October 28th and 29th. These events sell out quickly, so early reservations are recommended. You can camp out in the countryside and sleep under the stars with the sanctuary animals during the annual Spooky Campover fundraiser. This family-friendly, spooktacular overnight event includes campfire songs, pumpkin carving, a Halloween costume contest, and an all-ages haunted house. Enjoy the fun of the animal trivia challenge, make s'mores by the campfire, and sip hot cocoa at the Big Cat and Wildlife Sanctuary. The next morning is the pumpkin bash during the morning sanctuary visit. Come dressed in your best costume and watch the rescued big cats and bears devour their pumpkin treats. Pumpkins carved by campers the night before are stuffed with all kinds of delicious goodies for the animals. This event will take place rain or shine. For tickets, you can visit lionstigersandbears.org.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
Progressive groups are speaking out against the idea of a constitutional convention, warning it could be used to impose conservative policies on things such as civil rights, guns, voting rights, and abortion. Right-wing groups such as the Federalist Society say they want to require a balanced budget and limit the power to tax, moves critics say would lead to huge cuts in Medicare, Social Security, education, Medicaid, and environmental protection. Duke University professor Nancy McLean notes that Article 5 of the Constitution requires consent from just 2/3 of states to call for a convention.
The organizers of the convention effort have made clear the votes taken would not be based on population, but on 1 vote per state, so as to grossly underrepresent the majority of Americans.
That would give outsized influence to states with tiny populations, such as Wyoming, at the expense of huge states like California. Over the years, many states have called for a constitutional convention on specific topics. Golden State lawmakers just called for one on gun control. Conservative groups argue that the requests could be aggregated to reach the 34-state threshold and force a convention. Former Wisconsin Senator Russ Feingold, now with the American Constitution Society, just wrote a book that warns that a convention is likely if Republicans win full control of Congress next year.
They're asserting that you can mix and match these, and that meets the constitutional requirements. It's not right, and the Supreme Court doesn't appear to have the authority to step in and stop it.
Jonathan Mehta Stein with Common Cause California says the risk of a runaway convention is too great because there are very few rules in place.
We would have no idea who's seeking to influence the members of the Constitutional Convention, what lobbying would be happening behind the scenes. Would there be public records requirements? Would there be transparency requirements? We just have no idea.
Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
CAL FIRE has issued an urgent warning regarding drones operating illegally in firefighting airspace and impeding firefighting efforts. Aerial unmanned drones have caused temporary suspension of critical aerial firefighting operations at half a dozen fires so far this year, CAL FIRE reports. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, regularly implements temporary flight restrictions around wildfire areas to protect the safety of aircraft helping to fight fires. All aircraft, including drones, are prohibited from entering these restricted areas unless they are operated by an agency directly involved in wildfire suppression efforts. Even when a temporary flight restriction is not in effect, drone pilots are strongly urged to avoid flying near wildfires, since it is a crime to interfere with firefighting operations. CAL FIRE Chief Jake Scholand, who heads up the agency's tactical air operation, says, "The danger of flying drones near wildfires cannot be overstated. Such actions jeopardize lives and have immediate consequences for firefighting agencies' response efforts. When drones are detected near wildfires, fire response agencies ground their aircraft to prevent the risk of a mid-air collision. This delay poses a significant threat to the safety of the firefighters on the ground, as well as to residents and properties in nearby communities. Such delays can also allow wildfires to expand, putting more lives and resources at risk. People who operate drones without proper authorization over wildfire-affected areas may be found in violation of federal, state, and local laws and regulations. Drone operators found to have interfered with wildfire suppression efforts or to have endangered manned aircraft or people on the ground may face criminal prosecution as well as civil penalties of up to $20,000. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Cecily Chaminot.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.